Today is the 10th anniversary of Facebook. The social media giant has changed the way people use the internet and how they share stories about themselves and the world.
Today we'll zoom in on a couple of the changes Facebook has brought about in how we express ourselves and who we are and how the media is consumed and produced. Joining us in the studio, we have Catalina Toma. She's Assistant Professor of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. Catalina, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Kathleen Bartson-Culver, Assistant Professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and Associate Director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. Katie, thank you, too, for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
I want to listen to Mark Zuckerberg. This is an interview from a few years back with Business Insider talking about the early days of Facebook.
What I was building was this application for Harvard students, 6,000 people, to share some information about themselves and stay connected with their friends and family. And what we've basically just found since then is that that application is something that almost everyone wants to use, right? Everyone has an identity that they want to express and friends and family that they want to stay connected with.
Catalina, let's start there with the idea that everyone has an identity they want to express. When we're on Facebook, though, are we expressing an identity or maybe crafting an identity that we want other people to see?
We're certainly crafting an identity. And furthermore, we're crafting it with the complicity of our friends and family members. It's very much of a co-construct itself, where people are motivated to put their best face forward because they have a large audience to impress. And the audience is motivated to be social and to be pleasant, resulting in the construction of a attractive and socially connected and interesting self.
Maybe better than our real selves in some cases.
Yes, yes.
And Kathleen, one of the things people have taken to on Facebook is sharing news stories. In a Pew survey last year, I saw that almost a third of Americans say they use Facebook in part as a news site. How has that changed the way journalists do their jobs and practice their craft?
Well, it's changed in many ways, but those sheer numbers, I mean, one of the biggest changes has been how we amplify news stories. So thinking about how to, everything from what sources you use in a story to how to write a headline or a key phrase so that it'll get picked up and amplified on social media, particularly on Facebook. You know, we're looking at easily 30%+ of people saying Facebook is the primary place they find news in a day. And, you know, you have so many users, over half of all Facebook users have more than 200 friends. So that's an incredibly powerful sharing device.
And so when I'm a journalist coming up with a story, part of it is I'm thinking about the traditional who, what, when, where, why, and how. Part of it is, how can I get people to share this?
That is definitely part of the how. It's also part of the who, the what, and the where, and the when as well, because we're seeing more and more journalists using crowdsourcing through Facebook to try to find information for the stories, quotes for the stories, and reaching out and getting everything from a quote to photos through social media networks.
Speaking of crowdsourcing, I want to bring listeners in on this on the 10th anniversary of Facebook. How do you use Facebook? Do you use it to keep in touch with people, to let people keep in touch with what you're up to keep up with the news, and to share news stories or maybe political opinion pieces? Does anyone you know overshare? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll keep that thing mushrooming out there. Catalina, part of our online identity isn't just what we post ourselves, the things we type, the pictures we post, but what we share, whether it's a news story or something else. What is our choice of what to like and what to link say about us?
It certainly illustrates our interests. People use Facebook to tell the world what they're knowledgeable about, what they're interested in. And sometimes people are concerned with their privacy, so perhaps they choose to share and to link to non-controversial information or simply humor or funny stories that they think will entertain their audience.
I've seen some research in the past that suggests we like to, put links to highbrow stuff, science stories. But when it comes to actually clicking on links, we like cats and wacky stuff on the internet. What we want to be out there and what we're really doing have that kind of different outcome, do you think?
Yeah, it's very easy to portray an idealized self on Facebook, and people are motivated to do that to a certain extent in order to impress their audience, particularly since usually the audience is very vast and includes people we want to impress, like bosses and colleagues and potential bosses. So it's easy to claim a more knowledgeable, more sophisticated, more educated self through the linkages to these news articles, even though we might not actually read them. And there's quite a few cats online too.
Should we feel bad? Or are we being deceptive?
People don't necessarily view these portrayals of self as deceptive. I'm linking to it. I've probably read the abstract or a summary of the article. I know a little bit about what's going on with it. That, to me, does not necessarily imply that I'm lying.
And Kathleen, one place where journalists can get into trouble is how they present themselves in that blurred zone. Here I am reporting now. Here I am, excuse me, posting on social media. Where do we cross a line as journalists? Where do we have to be careful?
Well, it's hard for people to figure out where they, when they cross a line when we keep moving that little sucker so much. But I think that is one of the real ethical challenges for journalists is this blurring of the personal and the professional, and that we now make assumptions that people are their jobs 24 hours a day. And that's been difficult for some journalists, that they don't have that same social outlet that other people would have, that non-journalists would have. I think newsrooms have gotten more specific about what you can and cannot do in these kinds of spaces. And yet I think we all have to be careful about what that means, about saying your profession controls your life, because we all should have a life in balance.
But there's never going to be a time where journalists aren't getting themselves into trouble with what they post online, thinking that it's personal.
Oh, right. Absolutely. And I think audiences can be rightfully skeptical about issues of bias and that sort of thing that they find expressed through social media. So it's part of that ever ongoing interaction and participation between news workers and audience. I also think ethics in terms of what journalists are using from Facebook in stories have gotten a lot better. We've seen a lot more thoughtful approaches to things like using pictures and status updates for people, victims of crime, for instance, who haven't set their privacy settings correctly. It was sort of anybody's game early on, and now I think we're much more thoughtful about it.
That's journalists learning the rules, Catalina. Are we as individuals learning the rules of what to put on there and what not to?
We certainly are, and trial and error has a lot to do with it. Certainly getting into trouble over undesirable postings is a teachable lesson. The media likes to cover negative examples of people getting into trouble over their Facebook messages. So there's a lot of talk about that and increasing awareness. And we could also think of a developmental cycle whereby younger people might be less knowledgeable, a little bit more naive about what's acceptable, and becoming more protective of themselves and more aware of privacy settings as they get older and experience various rather unpleasant things.
We're talking about Facebook's 10th anniversary. That's today, by the way. And how Facebook and other social media have changed the way we communicate from person to person and in the media world. We have Catalina Toma and Kathleen Bartson-Culver with us from UW-Madison.
And we want to hear from you. Are you a journalist? How has social media changed your job? For you non-journalists out there, what do you share on social media? What don't you share? Are you constantly posting, keeping up with friends and family, or do you ignore the whole thing altogether? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation about the 10th anniversary of Facebook and how it's changed the way we communicate.
And we want to hear from you. How has it changed your life? How you keep in touch with people? Do you use Facebook for work? Do you share the news or follow the news via Facebook or other social media? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on our Facebook page. We are Central Time on WPR. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Katie with us in Cable. Katie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was just calling in to kind of just talk a little. I don't know. I was really averse to Facebook at first. I only went on kind of because folks who wanted to talk to me were like, just post the kids' pictures or send us a chat or do something, you know, we want to talk to you. We're so far away, we can't see. We don't get to see you all the time. And I really never went on at all. And then I found through work, I wound up using it so much more. I'm a teacher, and I've worked in two different programs now. One was a, you know, early childhood program where we had really young parents. And our family services program wasn't able to actually contact parents sometimes unless we could contact them through Facebook.
Interesting.
And it was amazing to me how quickly parents would respond. And I myself am a parent as well, and I was getting like all of our school notifications. I would find them on, you know, Facebook first, before I even sometimes got my phone call that said, hey, school's closed today. So it was just really interesting to realize that how many, especially younger parents right now, are so reliant on it. And I work in high-risk, high-poverty locations where people don't always have phones. They may not always live in the same place. And here, their Facebook, they can check kind of wherever they get to. And it was so universal that I would hear from parents in moments almost, even if there was an immediate chat. And I just thought that was really impressive. And to be able to use that in a really appropriate way, it's hard to balance that piece. And then also the fact of, you know, it is public social media, and how do you make sure you balance between the two of those?
Katie, thank you so much. Wow, a lot there. Catalina, let's start with Facebook and other social media as a means of communication for work, like her school program, maybe more effective than trying to call somebody.
Yes, Facebook has become very popular at conglomerating a variety of different communication functions. So emailing, sharing of information, being in touch with friends, all happens very quickly and at very low cost into one platform. They've been very successful into bringing all these different functions online. So I'm not surprised that news get disseminated really quickly on Facebook, and they're very easily accessible. Pretty much everywhere where there's an internet connection and people have a smartphone, which have penetrated the market very, very successfully.
And Katie, speaking of using Facebook on the job, I mean, just as in this case, there are times where I can't find a contact for a potential guest for the show outside of Facebook. Like, the only way they have out there for the world to reach them is a Facebook message. Is that a sign of things to come for journalists?
Absolutely, it's a sign of things to come for journalists, but I think everybody, journalists and others and teachers and school districts, need to pay attention to this movement of younger people away from Facebook. We're actually seeing some departing from Facebook. You know, the minute my mom got on, I got off Facebook. So we're going to have to watch that, and particularly for that younger demographic.
Back to the phones at 800-642-1234. We have Clarissa in Racine with us now. Clarissa, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
I was saying that Facebook pretty much took over my life with work, family, and friends. Like, literally, my 5-year-old daughter wants her own Facebook.
Oh, really? At 5 years old already? So have you set aside time? Have you made yourself take a time out from Facebook?
Yeah, when I'm at work and we're like really busy, I let the phone sit on the charger. But if I hear it go ding, then I know it's a Facebook post or somebody said something to me. So I'll like pull it down on my smartphone, look at it. But I'm like, oh man, I got to take a break. Then hurry up, take a break, fill it out. And I'm like, man, I just want to get off Facebook. I'll find myself deactivating my Facebook. Like, okay, it's taking too much of my time. I need to do something better. Then a month later, I'll pull it back up, and it's just like right back at it.
Clarissa, thanks a lot. And I'm somebody who will say, yeah, I mainly just stay on top of Facebook for work. But I'm at home. I got a little time to kill. I'll start seeing what people are doing. I don't post much, but I will find myself sucked in and looking at everything. Katie?
Well, that's actually fascinating. And Clarissa, I was interested in the fact that you were picking it up when it dinged, meaning something had been posted. There's some interesting data coming out of the Pew Research Center showing how few people actually post to Facebook. They're showing only about 10% of users post daily, though people consume in far greater numbers. And there's about a quarter of Facebook users have never changed their Facebook status from the time they started the account. So it is a medium for consumption, much more so than it is for expression.
So there are some, and now that I think about it, so when I'm looking on Facebook, there are a handful of people who provide probably 90% of my Facebook content. Catalina, the idea of Facebook taking over our lives a little bit, is that something that you see and maybe people are trying to get under control?
Yes, Facebook is incredibly addictive. I second Clarissa's point. And it accomplishes this in a variety of ways. First of all, the notification system and the news feed basically will tell you that every time you log in, your behavior gets rewarded by a piece of interesting information. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes to get comments and likes and feedback from their friends. These tend to be overwhelmingly supportive. Everybody likes to hear what their friends are doing and up to. So you go online, you see more information. The database of information is enormous. Even though only 10% of users may post, the average Facebook user has about 440 friends. So the information gets renewed constantly. You log in, you find out something entertaining. Your behavior gets rewarded. You want to go back again.
And here at Central Time, we certainly didn't get excited when we hit our first 1,000 Facebook followers last week. Okay, we did. We got a little excited. Oh, back to the phones now. Thanks for the call, Claire. So we've got Trace in Madison. Trace, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling to say that I'm one of the younger generation. I'm 23. I actually deleted my Facebook about 2 years ago because I found that when I would kind of go through and delete friends from maybe high school that I hadn't talked to in a few years, they were like, I was getting angry texts and there were repercussions, and I was kind of sick of my friendships and my social life being defined by my Facebook friends. So I got rid of it, and now I actually have not for 1 second regretted deleting it, and I actually encourage people to do that whenever they hear them complaining about it.
Trace, did you replace it with other social media or just real life?
Up until about a month ago, I had no social media. And then recently I got a Twitter, but I don't follow anybody who I know. I only use that to follow radio programs that I listen to or sports people that I like following. So even that, there's nobody that I follow from like my friends or my high school days or anything like that.
At Central Time WPR on Twitter, if you're not already there, Trace, Catalina.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Facebook is evidently very successful. It has about 1.2 billion users at this point. Not bad at all around the world. So evidently it does some positive things for relationships and people like it because of that. And one of them is the facility of maintaining connections at a very low cost. So you can be in touch with people and maintain a sense of connectedness through simply the click of a button, which is precisely what the like button is. You can be in touch with more people at the same time than we could before. So these are definitely positive things of Facebook use. But at the same time, Facebook is creating challenges for relationship management. It's putting people into situations that they have to negotiate, they have to discuss, creating perhaps conflicts that they didn't have to manage before. The examples that Trace gave us are fantastic. If you're becoming unfriended on Facebook, that's a source of relational discord that you have to manage now that you didn't have to manage before. Similarly, if you're in a relationship and you're posting pictures with other potential partners online, creating jealousy. Research shows that jealousy is very much stimulated by Facebook. So these are challenges, relational challenges that people now have to deal with thanks to Facebook.
And Katie, Trace mentioned Facebook's gone, but he went to Twitter to follow the news. Is that a trend we're seeing?
Well, absolutely. Twitter is on the rise, although Instagram has had a faster uptake rate than Twitter, especially among younger people like Trace. Although, Trace, maybe I'll make you a little bet here. You can follow me on Twitter, and I'm guessing you're going to be back on Facebook at some point, possibly for professional reasons.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Catalina, for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And Katie, thanks to you as well.
Terrific conversation.
That was journalism professor Kathleen Bartson-Culver and communications professor Catalina Toma, both from the UW-Madison. We've been talking about today's 10th anniversary of Facebook.